Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 19, titled The Perfection of Spiritual Knowledge, and text number 27. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Dharmo Madhakti Krit Prokto.
Dharmo
Madhakti Krit Prokto.
Jnanam Chaikyatmya Darshanam.
Jnanam Chaikyatmya Darshanam.
Guneshwasango
Vairagyam.
Guneshwasango
Vairagyam. Aishwaryam Chanimadayaha.
Aishwaryam chani madayaha.
Dharmo madbhakti krit prokto.
Jnanam
chaigatmya darshanam.
Guneshwasango vairagyam.
Aishwaryam chani madayaha.
Dharmo madbhakti krit prokto.
Jnanam
chaikatmya darshanam.
Guneshwasango
vairagyam.
Aishwaryam
chani madayaha.
Dharmaha.
Religion.
Mat.
Mai.
Bhakti.
Devotional service.
Krit,
producing.
Proktaha,
it is declared.
Jnanam,
knowledge.
Cha,
also.
Aikatmya,
the presence of the Supreme Soul.
Darshanam,
seeing.
Guneshu,
in the objects of sense gratification.
Asangaha,
having no interest.
Vairagyam,
detachment.
Aishwaryam,
opulence.
Cha,
also.
Anima,
the mystic perfection called anima.
Adayaha,
and so forth.
Translation:
actual religious principles are stated to be those that lead to one to my devotional service. Real knowledge is the awareness that reveals my all-pervading presence. Detachment is complete disinterest in the objects of material sense gratification. And opulence is the 8 mystic perfections such as anima siddhi.
This is a purport by servants of Srila Prabhupada.
The Supreme Lord is perfect knowledge. Thus, one who has been delivered from ignorance automatically engages in the devotional service of the Lord and is called religious. One who becomes detached from the 3 modes of material nature and the gratificatory objects they produce is considered to be situated in detachment. The 8 mystic yoga perfections described previously by the Lord to Uddhava constitute material power or opulence in the highest degree.
Moma Jnana Tivirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna.
So here Krishna is speaking to Uddhava regarding what is the aim of religious rituals, the religious duties. What is meant by knowledge? What is opulence? So the first point that is made in this verse is what is religiosity? What is the true meaning of religiosity? As we know, the religion has four limbs in general. That is dharmartha, kama, moksha. First is dharma, the religious piety. Then from there comes the artha, artha meaning the wealth, which is the essential ingredient for sense gratification. So once one has the wealth, then one goes to the platform of dharma, artha, kama, where there is sense gratification. There is no money, there is no fun. So that is the third level. And one is frustrated by material sense gratification, then one can think about liberation or getting out from the material realm. So this is the common ingredient of so-called religion. This religious piety we can see all around the world, maybe to varying degree. When I went to India, I was speaking to many people, especially few ladies, and they had the weekly roster of going to different demigod temples. You know, Monday to this temple, Tuesday to the next temple, one day Ganesh, next day Durga, third day Lord Shiva. Like that, they have the full roster for the whole week. And they are so busy, and they don't have any understanding of Bhagavad Gita, and they don't accept the supreme position of Krishna. So this is the so-called religious piety. So when people go to the so-called places of worship, they think they are very pious. Of course, it is laudable, at least they have some inclination towards God, but at the same time, it's not the highest. It's only a preliminary state from where one has to make progress. When we were driving down, my uncle was telling, you know, there are so many people sitting and looking at the sun in the morning, early morning, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock. They are sitting like this and they are trying to open their eyes as much as possible and look at the sun. As much as possible, as long as possible. And the whole aim is, it is called Surya Upasana. As we have read in Bhagavad Gita, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions, people worship demigods like Surya, that is sun god, to get rid of different kinds of diseases. So I was seeing, or I was hearing actually, look at this, so many people, they are actually getting up early, and when the sun is, you know, rising, so the morning sun, the light is dim, they are looking at the sun, and as the time progresses, okay, they will be able to see more and more, and this is called Surya Upasana. And one Swami is called Surya Swami. I mean, Sun Swami. He is actually teaching this technique, how to look at sun and, you know, get rid of many diseases. So this is religious piety. They are approaching different demigods for different material benefits. Whereas Srimad Bhagavatam completely rejects these kind of religiosities. So second verse in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.1.2 says, Dharma prochita kaitavotra paramam nirmasaranam satam. That is dharma prochita kaitava dharmotra. That is the religion, the religious duties which are meant for sense gratification, or which has a tinge of sense gratification, which is not really coming to the supreme love for Godhead, that is being rejected completely by Srimad Bhagavatam. And establishes the true religion, which is relished by Nirmasaranam Satam. That is, the people who are not interested in material sense gratification, those who are pure at heart, and those who are not interested to compete with people who are interested in sense gratification. This is the qualification of people who can relish Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavatam presents Prema Pumartho Mahan, the highest Purushartha, which is above Dharmartha Kama Moksha, above these four Purusharthas, or the purposes of life. That is the Panchama Purushartha, the fifth one. That is Prema, the love of Godhead. So Srimad Bhagavatam says, and here particularly this verse says, actual religious principles are stated to be those that lead one to my devotional service.
So whichever occupational duties or whichever religious duties that one performs, if it can lead one to devotional service to Krishna, then that makes sense. That is meaningful. Otherwise, it is not meaningful. So Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, it's the second chapter, says, Dharma Swanishtita Pumsam Vikshuksena Kathasuva Na Upadaye Yadiratihi Shrama Evahi Kevalam. That is, if somebody is performing religious duties or occupational duties, which is not ending up in devotional service unto Krishna, if it is not giving taste to hear about the glories of Krishna, then it is useless waste of time. Shrama evahi kevalam. Shrama means the useless duties, useless time, useless waste of time. So it is said, one has to perform religious duties, one has to perform occupational duties, such that ultimately one can come to devotional service, to bhakti towards Krishna. So we can see all the activities can be dovetailed in Krishna service. The acharyas, they could see the connection. They could see how all the activities and all the skills could be used in Krishna service. Srila Prabhupada, the founder acharya of ISKCON, he saw the interest of George Harrison. He engaged his propensities in Krishna service. And he had a great impact around the world by delivering different musics. He engaged Bhakti Swarup Damodar Maharaj, who was a scientist, to glorify Krishna through science. We can see other Srila Prabhupada's disciples, Dhruta Karma Prabhu, Sadaputta Prabhu, they were scientists. And they could glorify Krishna through science. Srila Prabhupada engaged artists to glorify Krishna through different paintings. In one interview, one of the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, he mentioned, Sudama Prabhu, he mentioned that once Srila Prabhupada told him that these your paintings are even more glorious than the books. And the point Srila Prabhupada made was, the books is limited to one language. If it is in English, only the English-speaking people can understand. However, these paintings, anyone can relish. So it is beyond language. So Prabhupada said, okay, this is wonderful. It's a very nice example when Srila Prabhupada was in the Bowery in the Matchless Gift. One person just, he entered, a drunkard man, he entered the lecture room when Srila Prabhupada was delivering the lecture, and he just left a toilet paper in the toilet, a toilet roll in the toilet. And immediately Srila Prabhupada said, he has done such a wonderful devotional service. So he could see all activities in connection with Krishna. And our principle of Achindya Bheda Abheda Tattva, that is seeing the connection between the energies of the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Lord and seeing its known difference, that has practical implication. So when one sees something in connection with Krishna, then it can be utilized in Krishna's service. So this philosophy of Achindya Bheda Abheda Tattva, it's not just a philosophy, just not a theory, but our whole activities are based on that. We use everything in service of Krishna. That is based on this simple philosophy. So, if you see the speculative philosophers, they would like to argue for ages on different philosophical aspects, where the Supreme Lord and the living entities, are they one, are they different, what are the differences? They argue like anything. Even we can see in Mahaprabhu's pastimes, how the monists and the Advaitavadis, how they were arguing, going on and on, with different aspects. San Mahaprabhu said, both of you are right, because the Supreme Lord is known different from the living entities. At the same time, they are different. The qualitative oneness and quantitative difference. When we talk about the mental speculators, they study all the Shastra, or many of the Shastras. However, they can come to no conclusions. Once I was mentioning here about one of my relative who was studying Bhagavad Gita. He has read 200 commentaries of Bhagavad Gita. He studied 200 commentaries of Bhagavad Gita. And he had made, you know, this much note on all these Bhagavad Gitas, including Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. Still he couldn't understand who is Krishna. He was arguing Krishna's body is made of material energy. And I was quoting the verse, Janma Karma Cha Me Divyam. Krishna says, Janma Karma Cha Me Divyam. Divyam means transcendental. Janma and Karma, my birth and activities are transcendental. Krishna is saying in 4th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. However, this person was telling, no, the translation of Divyam is not accurate. So, Divyam just means it's special. You know, it's something more than ordinary, but it doesn't mean it is transcendental. So this is how they argue. Just pick each word and without understanding the right conclusions, they just argue. It's a useless waste of time. And this time when I visited India, as my relative, I had to visit him. So I went to his house and he said, now I have almost done Bhagavad Gita because I have read so many books. And I have written a book also. So I have studied 200 commentaries and 200 first, the one more commentary I have written. And now I am studying Srimad Bhagavatam. So he said, I am studying Srimad Bhagavatam, Pancharatras and the Bhakti Prasthan, the Bhakti Prasthan, the movement, Bhakti movement. He is studying on that from the historic perspective. He said, that is my new study. Okay, I said, okay, it's very interesting. So what are you studying now? So he said, okay, I am actually studying the evolution of Bhagavatam. How this Bhagavatam was written, where it actually came from. I said, you know, it's very simple. Now we can see the conversation between Narada Muni and Vyasadeva. It is given in Bhagavatam itself. No, that is there in Bhagavatam, but we cannot accept that straight away. We want the historic evidence. We want to see first which scriptures, which Puranas came. First, which one, Padma Purana or Vishnu Purana, which came. And from there, what points they took. And from there, how. It's like a research paper. There was first research paper, based on that the second one came, and based on that the third. In a similar fashion, how this Bhagavatam came about. So that was a study. And also he said, okay, I have really arguments regarding, I have really doubt regarding the age in which Srimad Bhagavatam was written. He said, you people say that it is 5,000 years ago. I said, yeah, that's right, it is 5,000 years ago. He said, no. Because there are a few predictions in Bhagavatam, like King Ashoka, Buddha, etc. So this actually indicates that Bhagavatam was written after that. So I said, if that is the case, there is prediction of Kalki, there are predictions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then it means, you know, how can you say these predictions doesn't hold? There are predictions for more than 400,000 years later. So on that basis, how can you reject? He said, okay. Anyway, we are studying. I will do more research. We'll let you know later. So, you know, people are just going on speculating. And at the same time, occasionally eat meats. You know, meat is okay. You know, sometimes drink, you know, when going for party. That's all. So this is if you consider the moral side, you know, it is very weak. There is no following of Krishna. Now he said, okay, I am also studying Bhagavad Gita, all the verses, 700 verses. Remembering all the verses, I am memorizing all the verses. I said, it's very good. But the conclusion is completely wrong. So this is the problem with mental speculation. Can't come to anywhere. Whereas great acharyas, they could see everything in connection with Krishna and they could utilize everything in connection to Krishna. And they were so much enlivened to propagate the bhakti movement, to propagate the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One time, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when the yoga pit was being constructed in Mayapur, it used to be such that the workers will come, the laborers will come, and they will do the construction work, and they used to have the BD break. BD is the Indian cigarette. So they will do the work, and in between the work they will go for the BD break. So they have to smoke. So it works like this. They have the tobacco, they have the leaf, and they take a few minutes to roll it, and then they smoke. So they used to do this. So when Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur came to know this, he said, the work should go on without any breaks like this, and I can roll BD for them so that they don't waste time for rolling the BD. This was the mood of Bhaktisiddhanta, so that the glory of Mahaprabhu would be spread as soon as possible. It's not that we can imitate, we can supply cigarettes to those who are coming here for work. But understanding the mood, that is, even though at any cost, the glory of Mahaprabhu should be spread. Even one time, when a big government official was visiting Navadvip, all the devotees, they said, when the Britishers come, we have to supply them meat. Because otherwise they won't come. Bhaktisiddhanta said, yes, it is fine. We will give them meat. Still let him come. Because it is important to develop Navadvip, Mayapur. Then it is said, they organized actually other part of Navadvip, some worshippers of Kali who were meat eaters to arrange some meat if this British official wants. Bhaktisiddhanta made a statement. He said, I think I don't remember exactly how many births back. He said, I used to think like you, whether to get him here or not. I used to think like that many births ago. But now, no. I want the glories of Mahaprabhu should be established now. So let him come. So that is the mood of Bhaktisiddhanta. That is, to preach Krishna consciousness at any cost. And here is mentioned, the real knowledge is knowledge of Krishna. Why? Because the knowledge of Krishna, when it is come from the right source, it can cause transformation to the heart. It can cause transformation to the life. When Srila Prabhupada spoke about Krishna, in one lecture Srila Prabhupada asked, who knows about Krishna? Who has heard about Krishna in this crowd? Not even a single person. Nobody heard about Krishna. To them, Srila Prabhupada could convince Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is the knowledge coming from the right source. And it is exactly the opposite of mental speculator who is studying Bhagavad Gita, many commentaries, still not coming to the right conclusion. Today we will see a pastime in which the knowledge caused transformation of the heart. This was the pastime of Yamunacharya. Yamunacharya, he was a Brahmin boy by birth, and at the age of 12, he learned all the Shastras. His guru was Bhavasya Acharya, and he was son of Nathamuni. So at the age of 12, he could understand all the Vedas, and he could understand all the conclusions of the Vedas. And he was very pious, and he was practicing the religious duties very nicely. At one day, a pandit was travelling in that part of South India, and this pandit's name was Kolahalan, and he was defeating all other pandits. So he was challenging. It's just like Mahaprabhu's pastime, how Digvijay was travelling and Kashmiri pandit was travelling. In the same way, this pandit was travelling and he was defeating everyone, and after defeating everyone, he will demand tax. So if a pandit is being defeated by this Kolahalan, then he has to pay tax. So it happened that Yamunacharya's guru, Bhavasyacharya, was also being defeated by this great pandit. And the time passed. 2 years later, one of this great pandit's disciple arrived in the ashram of Bhavasyacharya, the guru of Yamunacharya. Unfortunately, his guru wasn't present. So, Yamunacharya said, what's the matter? Why did you come? He said, my guru has already defeated your guru 2 years back. And for 2 years, he has not paid even a single penny. He hasn't paid any tax. So now, he should pay. Otherwise, he's a rascal. Hearing this, Yamunacharya said, as a little boy, he said, this proud disciple, you are a proud disciple, and it shows that your guru is a fool. Hearing this, the disciple became quite shocked. And not only that, Yamunacharya said, if actually required, I can defeat your guru in argument. So the disciple became completely bewildered, and he went back to his ashram in great anger. And he mentioned to his guru that there is this boy, he is challenging you, the disciple of Bhavasyacharya. So his guru, the great pandit, who was very puffed up,
He said, what's the whole point? I can defeat the great pundits, and what is this little boy? Anyway, if somebody has invited for arguments, I should go. So he talked to the king. So there's going to be an argument, there's going to be a debate with Yamunacharya and this great pundit in presence of the king. The king sent his servants to Yamunacharya and he said the condition. Since this pundit is so great, if you can't defeat this great pundit, you will be killed. It'll be death punishment. So Yamunacharya said, that is fine. I can defeat him. It's not a big problem. But you have to send a palanquin for me to go to the debate. So king said, yes, that's fine. So in the palanquin, Yamunacharya started as a little boy. He started traveling to the king's palace and the great pundit was sitting there. And the argument and the debate is about to start. So he came. Yamunacharya paid obeisances to all great people and then he sat for the argument. That time, queen said to king, queen was very impressed by Yamunacharya. And he said, she said, if this boy doesn't defeat this great pundit, you can throw myself to wild dogs. And if this boy wins the argument, then you have to give half the kingdom to this boy. So this was the condition. So the queen persuaded so much the king, so that finally king agreed, okay, that's fine. And the argument started. This great pundit started asking so many questions. So pundit started asking questions, basic questions in Sanskrit grammar. So Yamunacharya, you know, answered very easily. Then he increased his level of the questions. Still Yamunacharya answered all these questions with ease. Then he asked very complicated philosophical questions. Still Yamunacharya could answer all these questions without any difficulty. Then Yamunacharya said, look, you have asked all these questions. These questions are very simple for me. There is no challenge for me. So I will do one thing. I will ask some questions to you. Can you answer these questions? Pandit said, Pandit was already shaken a bit because Yamunacharya could answer all the questions. Still Pandit said, yes, I will for sure. So the first question he said, refute my statements. Yamunacharya said, refute my statements. I'll make three statements and you have to refute them. The first statement was, your mother is barren. Means your mother doesn't have any children. That was the first statement. So the pandit got bewildered. Because how can he refute the statement? Can he accept the statement? No, because the pandit is the child and the Yamunacharya is saying your mother is barren. So we couldn't do anything with the statement. Second, he said, so the next statement he said, the king is righteous. It means he has to refute that the king is righteous. So it is a very difficult, the king is there and whole army is there and this pandit had to refute that the king is righteous. So he has to prove that king is unrighteous. So it was difficult. So the king, so he said, you had to actually kill this boy. Because he is making such nonsense statements, so we had to kill him. So nothing happened. Yamunacharya again thought and he said the third one. He said, the queen is chaste. So this was a big blow. Because the pandit had to refute that the queen is chaste. How can you do that in presence of the king and in presence of the queen? So there was a big uproar in the crowd. And Yamunacharya said, the pandit said, we have to punish him severely or kill him for this nasty statements. Yamunacharya said, look, I can refute all these statements without any difficulty. And he said, Yamunacharya said, as a little boy, he said, your mother is barren. That is actually a true statement. It's a true statement because according to Manusmriti, if a mother has only one son, then that is considered as good as none. So your mother is barren. That is a right statement. Second, he said, the king is righteous, we say, but that is not true. It has to be refuted. The reason is, in a kingdom, there will be people who does pious activities and who do not do pious activities. So whatever activities they perform, 1/6 of the karma goes to the king. So even though king may be very righteous, still because of the subjects, he will get the karma. So he cannot be considered righteous anymore. So the second statement was refuted. And the third statement was, queen is chaste. So he is telling queen is not chaste. So Yamunacharya said, which is true, because the king, in king resides all the demigods like Indra, Sun, Agni, Vayu, etc. So even though the queen is only married to the king, actually the queen is married to all the demigods residing within king. So we cannot consider her to be chaste. So hearing this, the pandit was completely smashed. And the king gave him half the kingdom. Now Yamunacharya is a great king. Even though he was a Brahmin boy, now he has become a king. When he became a king, unfortunately one thing happened to him. He actually forgot devotional service. That was the bad part. His whole life then was meant to stretch the boundaries of the kingdom. He was enjoying like anything. He had wealth. He had beautiful queens. He had, basically he had wealth and woman. He had both opulence. And he forgot devotional service. So the whole aim was how to prosper the kingdom. How to make it more wealthier. How to increase the boundaries of the kingdom. So he was ruling like that. So the age passed. So he became an enjoying king. So he was no more a Vedic king who was completely Krishna conscious. Rather, he became completely engrossed in sense gratification. And that time, king, the position of a king means it is great. And he has everything at his hands. So he was enjoying like anything. And he was in deep thought. How to conquer more kingdoms and how to get more wealth. He was thinking like that deeply. However, at that point, there was the grandfather of Yamunacharya. He left his body in that time. So grandfather of Yamunacharya told one of his disciples, who was very Krishna conscious, told that you go to this king Yamunacharya, who was then known as Alabandha. You go to him and you teach him Krishna consciousness. Bring him back to Krishna consciousness. Now he is an enjoying king, but bring him back to Krishna consciousness. So his disciple, he started thinking, how can I actually attract the mind of Alabandha, Yamunacharya? He is a king. Because he is not at all interested in Bhagavad Gita. He is not interested in Bhagavatam. He is only interested in wealth and kingdom. So he devised a plan. This disciple who was a Brahmin, he started bringing a special kind of spinach for the king. So every day he will come, he will deliver the spinach to the kitchen of the king. And it was very special and it was very tasty. And he couldn't get it anywhere else. So every day he used to come, he used to give the spinach. And the servants, they used to cook and they used to feed the king. And Yamunacharya was very happy with this particular preparation with spinach. So the days passed, the months passed. One day, this Brahmin didn't bring spinach. So that day king asked, that is Yamunacharya asked, where is my favorite spinach dish? It's not there. It was a special kind of spinach. So it was very tasty. So king was missing it. He said, where is it? Then the servants, they told the whole story. Look, there is this Brahmin. He comes every day specifically to bring the spinach. He delivers it. He doesn't take anything from us and he just goes back. And at this point, today he didn't come. That's the reason we couldn't prepare this particular sabji. So, king said, oh yes, okay, that is very interesting. I want to meet this person. Because he's caring so much for me. So he said, okay, let's bring him next time. So, next day this Brahmin again came and he directly got the audience of Yamunacharya, got the audience of Alabandha, the great king. So king asked, what happened? He said, yeah, son, sorry, son, okay, I couldn't actually. But I have to tell you something. This Brahmin said, I have a great news for you. Because I am carrying a message from your grandfather. And the message is that there is a great wealth,
a big, big, massive wealth. And that is, it's a big treasure, that is actually protected by 9 gates. It is within the 9 gates. If we pass through the 9 gates, far from here, we can actually get this treasure. Hearing this, Yamunacharya was completely impressed. Oh yes, I remember, now I can remember my grandfather. Yes, he is a very wise man. So I have some wealth, and I had to get that wealth. He was completely focused. How can I get it? So the Brahmin said, yes, I can show you where this great wealth is, but there is one condition. You had to come with me. It is not nearby. You had to come with me. We had to travel a bit of distance. So king said, okay, where is my army? Where is my entourage? Everyone come with me. Brahmin said, no, you have to come alone. And you have to come as a normal person. So he removed his royal garments and he went as a normal person. He started walking with this Brahmin. So they were walking, it's a, you know, normal way, sometimes forest, jungle. So they were walking. All these ways, this Brahmin started reciting verses from Bhagavad Gita. So he started from first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He started Dharma Kshetre, Kuru Kshetre, Samaveta, Yusava, Mamaka, Pandavesheva, Kimakurvada, Sanchaya. Like that he started, one after another. So when this king started hearing these verses, actually he started getting reminded of Krishna. He started getting reminded of Krishna consciousness. He started understanding about bhakti. He started understanding of glory of bhakti. And by the time they reached the destination where this treasure was kept, he was heard whole Bhagavad Gita. And he was completely convinced the supremacy of devotional service unto Krishna. And he said, the king said to the Brahmin that, I don't want your treasure. Because I have got the real treasure. That is Krishna consciousness. However, Brahmin said, still, I have to give you the treasure. Because now you can appreciate that treasure much more than ever before. So that was in Srirangam. So by that time, they reached Srirangam. And Srirangam temple had this many gates. So they passed through the gates and they reached the deity of Ranganath. So when, and this Brahmin gave him the darshan of Lord Ranganath. So the, seeing Krishna in that form, Yamunacharya's heart was completely melted. And he said, I don't want kingdom anymore. And he never went back to his kingdom. So that was the transformation. And this transformation happened just hearing the glories of Krishna. From the right source, from Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna says in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, how to be fixed in Krishna consciousness, how to be the greatest yogi, starting from Mayasaktamana Krishna, Yogam Yunjanmatashraya, Asamshayam Samagramma Yatha Gyayasi Tachranu. That is, by hearing, the process of hearing Krishna consciousness, by hearing the knowledge about Krishna, the heart gets transformed. Srinvatam Sagatha Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridayandasta Abhadrani Visurnoti Suhursatam. That is, just by hearing the glories of Krishna, whatever is anarthas, whatever are, which are the impediments in our heart, they are removed. Because Krishna is situated within the heart as Suhrit, as a dear friend, he removes those anarthas. So that is the process of Krishna consciousness. And Yamunacharya, when he became matured in his devotional service, he wrote great poetries glorifying the Supreme Lord. We can see one of the famous verses of Yamunacharya in purports of Srila Prabhupada, in which Yamunacharya is saying, when I think of association with the opposite sex, when I just think about that, when that thought comes to my mind, I spit at that thought. Why? Because now I am relishing the varieties of Krishna, varieties of pastimes of Krishna. So that is giving newer and newer taste. So this was the transformation of Yamunacharya. From an enjoying king to a great acharya who was relishing nava nava rasa, a newer and newer taste in Krishna consciousness. So that is the nature of the material and the spiritual existence. Both has varieties. Even the material existence provides variety, same as the spiritual existence. It is just like
if you open the computer or a laptop, if you go to the color palette, it has, you know, many, many millions of colors, many millions of shades, true color. It can provide so many varieties. That is material existence. It is giving so many varieties, but for entangling us in the material world. But there are varieties, and people like varieties. Especially men, if you want to buy some, say, an MP3 player or a video camera, people go do so much of research. Which are the models? First go for different options, then go to internet, read different reviews. So many reviews. And, you know, there could be contradictions, then resolve the contradiction, then finally opt for one. It involves a lot of process, and people are ready for that. Because people like the varieties. And if there is no choice, people say, oh, there is no choice. It's like old, oh, you know, India maybe 20 years back, only one car, Ambassador. There is no choice. You know, it's like dry. It's like, you know, plain vanilla ice cream. There is no choice. No variety. The people want variety, material variety. It's like Mataji will go for buying, you know, saris. I remember when I went with my mother, you know, many years back actually, to the clothes shop. You know, it's like, you know, the saris are, you know, piling on top of the bench, you know, one after another. And the whole discussion going on, you know, which color, you know, which flower, you know, which border, which variety, which material. You know, the whole thing is going on again and again. And we get, you know, bored. Oh, you know, what's going on? You're sitting in a corner. So this is varieties. Varieties, people like varieties. And if there are no varieties, then people can't appreciate. But actually the material varieties are indication towards spiritual variety. Krishna's, everything related to Krishna has so many varieties. As Srila Prabhupada mentioned, variety is the mother of enjoyment. The principle of enjoyment is variety. Even the rest of Krishna has so much of varieties. Srila Rupa Goswami says, Ghanda Khandidam Bhuri Natavesha Kriyojitam Aneka Varnam Vasanam Bhuishtam Kathidam Budhari. Rupa Goswami says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Krishna has so many different kind of garments. He says, Ghanda Khandidam Bhuri. Bhuri means so many different varieties. Ghanda means cut. Akhandidam means which is not cut. So Krishna's garments are made of so many cut and uncut clothes. That is Aneka Varnam Vasanam. That too, so many different varieties, so many different colors. And why Krishna has such a variety? He says, because these garments are suiting a dancing actor. He says, Natavesha Kriyojitam, which are suiting for a perfect actor to act in a stage, whatever is required, that many garments he has. That is unlimited. So that is the indication of the spiritual varieties. And the material varieties are indicative of spiritual varieties. Here the material varieties just entangles and cannot give the real taste. But at the same time, spiritual varieties are giving the real taste. And without the taste, we cannot continue devotional service. To some degree or the other degree, we have a bit of taste for devotional service. Otherwise, we cannot chant the same mantra every day. We cannot wear the same clothes every day. We cannot see the same deities every day. If there is no taste. The service, same service every day. Devotees are pretty much glorified if somebody does same service many, many years. How is it possible? Because there is relishment within the heart. There is varieties within the heart. Because there is reciprocation within the heart. So Krishna is providing spiritual variety within the heart. And with that, devotees can go on in spiritual life. That is the example given by Sri Yamunacharya. He is experiencing the spiritual varieties to the highest degree, so that even the highest of the sense gratification looks pale to him. Now the final point in this verse is, opulence is the 8 mystic perfections such as anima siddhi. So in the material life, the highest of the siddhis, highest of the perfection is anima, lakuma, manima, etc. Which are the mystic perfections to become smaller than the smallest, bigger than the biggest, creating one's own planet, creating one's mind, etc. There are many siddhis, many mystic perfections. However, in the spiritual sense, all the great residents of spiritual planet, the Vaikunthavasis, the Brajavasis, they are the great mystics. They have yoga siddhis. They manifest all these yoga siddhis whenever is required for the pastimes of Krishna. Whenever it's time to facilitate the pastime of Krishna, they manifest all these siddhis. So even though the material siddhis are there in the material world, and one can strive to achieve this, the real mysticism, that is bhakti yoga, and that can actually give the real mystic power. That is devotion to Krishna. And devotees of the spiritual world, they manifest whenever it is required. So I'll finish this and see if there are any comments, questions or corrections. Even the anima siddhi, even if it is used, it's an opulence. It's a material opulence. The siddhis are just material opulence. So if it is used in Krishna service, then it becomes devotional. Otherwise, it is material opulence.
Only under this condition.
Sorry?
Only under this condition. When it is used in Krishna service,
it becomes devotional service. And if it is not, it becomes just material opulence.
Could you please comment a little bit more about developing taste for devotional service? Even if we do something every day or a day, how to do it?
Yeah. Two things are connected. One is sadhana and seva. So sadhana gives power for seva, and seva in that way in turn supports sadhana. So our sadhana is primarily focused on chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So if you want to be fixed in devotion service, if you want to actually develop taste for devotion service, the prime focus is attentive chanting of Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That is the base. And with that, one can develop taste for devotional service. And without proper chanting, it is not possible to develop taste for devotional service. I remember class by Bhakti Sarpa, he was mentioning one as verse from Shikshashtakam, Trinata Bisunichena, Tarorabi Sahishnana, Amanana Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. That is a qualification to chant 24 hours actually. That is Trinata Bisunichena, one becoming more tolerant than a tree. Tarorabi Sahishnana. More humbler than a blade of grass and more tolerant than a tree. So that is the formula actually in chanting. Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, it is mentioned in the 2nd chapter. Nirvrta dashe rupagiyamana bhavoshada chotra manohirama ka uttama shloka gunanuvada puman virajeta vina pashuknat. So it is said, it is a question, it is asking, who other than a killer of a soul or a butcher wouldn't be interested in glorifying Krishna constantly? So we have to understand, when we really don't want to chant properly, we are actually trying to kill ourselves. In other words, we are trying to kill our own devotion life. So when we chant nicely and attentively, then it will have impact on our service, because we will be reminded of Krishna. And when we are reminded of Krishna, then our service becomes more tasty and relishable.
Where is the past time Humani Chagar from?
Where I got it from? Personally, I heard from, I have read in a lecture by His Holiness Rathanath Swami Maharaj. So I've couple of times I heard from few devotees this past time. And there is a book called about the Sri Vaishnava Acharyas, and in that there is a pastime is described actually. But mainly I heard this lecture, I have heard this before, so I remember.
When you say
I don't know exact year, but it was before Mahaprabhu. Yeah, because Yamanacharya was present before Ramanujacharya. He is the guru of Ramanujacharya, so I don't know exactly. It's more than 500 for sure. Any Prabhu, do you know exactly?
12th century.
So about maybe 800 years back. Yeah. Chanting should reflect in sadhana, in seva, How can you understand this?
People can purify or can only by chanting and not by seva?
No, seva is important. Okay. So very important.
I have thought like that, you know, seva and sadhana. That is why.
Yeah, that's right. Seva and sadhana.
Go and help. But there is new generation to see, they don't have time to see. So I just really big back with them.
I'm taking it as a correction, so. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.